You are welcome to another exciting episode of CADA Matters. CADA Matters is an awareness-raising program of CADA. CADA is an acronym for Church Against Domestic Abuse, a UK-based charity working to prevent and end domestic abuse, especially in Christian homes. Listen to this episode with Gracilis so as to build healthy relationships and keep your home and relationships abuse-free.
Hello, good evening, everybody. You are welcome to another episode of CADA Matters. It's another Thursday evening, and I'm excited today because we do have a special guest with us coming all the way from Nigeria. She's going to be here soon, and I want to welcome her quickly. She's here already. I want to say a big thank you to everyone for coming. Thank you for joining us today. Today's topic, we are looking at female genital mutilation. And we do hope that we'll all learn a lot of things. I've come here as usual to learn things, and I do hope that you have come to learn, because that's what we come to do in this program. Welcome again, everybody, to CADA Matters today. So I'm going to invite our guest in. I saw her just now, so I'm just going to invite her in to join tonight as we continue today. Thank you so much for joining us. We're waiting for her to join us. And yes, she's joined us. Hello, Oster. Good evening. It's good to have you. I'm really sorry about the delay and the time mix-up. That is really my fault. I put my hands up. I always have to be careful whenever we change our times. I'm really sorry about that. I've kept you very late today. I hope your family would forgive me.
Yeah, no problem.
Good evening. You're welcome. So welcome everybody once again. Today we are, as we said, we're going to be looking at female genital mutilation. And we've got with us a GBV specialist. She's going to be introducing herself to us and telling us about what she does, so that for those of us who are watching now and those who watch later will know, you know, the experience behind the person who is talking to us. So I'll just leave the floor for her enter. But before I call her up again, I want to say welcome, everybody. It's another episode of CADA Matters. And CADA is just the acronym for Church Against Domestic Abuse. CADA Matters is an awareness-raising program that we have. And what we do here is to raise awareness on matters of domestic abuse. And so today joining us is Oster Adeze Oji. So, Oster, please, could you introduce yourself to our guests? A lot of people want to know who you are. Why should they listen to you? You know, there's some people like that, but we don't mind listening to you because we're sure you know what you're going to tell us today.
Okay, thank you very much for having me. My name is Augusta Oji. I'm a humanitarian aid worker. I specialize in gender-based violence.
Okay, thank you so much, Oster, for that short introduction. I believe that everyone has heard where you're from and what you actually do. So we're going to pick up very quickly because we're aware of the time. So the first thing we would like to know, we advertise and say to people that we're going to talk about female genital mutilation. If someone is listening to us for the first time who doesn't know what that is, do you want to explain what that is really to somebody listening?
Okay. Female genital mutilation is a form of gender-based violence and is a harmful traditional practices. It means partial or total removal of external female genitalia or other injuries done to female genital organs for non-medical reasons. FGM is mostly carried out by traditional circumcisers who are also traditional birth attendants. And in most settings, healthcare providers do perform that because people believe that when it is medicalized, it is safer. But WHO strongly condemns it. So that is it.
Okay, so when it comes to female genital mutilation, we're saying that the genitals of the female are actually being removed, and then they are removed for different purposes. You've mentioned that this is sometimes done by birth attendants. That's in traditional birth attendants. Is it? Are they doing it as a way of circumcision, the way you do male circumcision, or what exactly is the idea behind it? I mean, why is it done? Why would somebody want to do that to a woman?
Actually, it's a form of female circumcision.
Okay.
Because in, yeah, it's a form of female circumcision because in FGM, it is, they basically remove the clitoris, which is the most sensitive part of the female genitalia. So the clitoris is, can be likened to the penis of the man. So, and you know, when the clitoris is removed, the woman no longer feels anything. So that is, it is a form of female circumcision. So, and then the people, okay.
No, and just continue, because I'm trying to understand what's going on.
The FGM is basically practiced based on cultural beliefs and social norms. In some culture, some people actually believe that if a woman or a girl is circumcised, it helps the girl to exhibit a certain positive behavior, a behavior that is believed to be acceptable. In some culture, they see it as a social norm, as and the social pressure to conform to what others do and what others have been doing. So many people perform it for so many reasons in so many cultures and societies. So in some culture, people perform FGM as a way of initiation into womanhood.
Okay.
You know? Yes. Some people perform it in order to assure them that a woman or a girl will maintain her virginity before marriage, and it also assures the husband of her fidelity in marriage. So some other people perform it as a way of bringing the lady into normal adulthood.
Good.
In some cultures. Yeah. Some also believe that it increases marriageability, and if FGM is not carried out on you, nobody will marry you. So many superstitious beliefs. You know, so many spatial beliefs and cultural norms attached to FGM.
FGM, okay. Well, I think that that's the, I believe, the role that sort of culture gets to play when it comes to all of this sort of abuse. Because, I mean, cutting any part of anybody's body at any point in time is actually abuse. It's a bodily harm, is abuse. But, you know, there's something you've mentioned, talking about the clitoris, it being one of the most, I mean, sensitive parts of a woman's private parts. And that's something she would need. And I think some cultures believe that taking that off will make her less promiscuous, will let her stay in the house and not start going around. But at the end of the day, that means you're sort of like denying the woman the right to enjoy sex. And just the enjoyment as it were for sex for the man, which is a wrong narrative.
Yes, actually, it's a kind of selfish purpose, because if you check all the cultures that are practicing it, the reasons behind it are basically on selfish reasons.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't favor woman, and it's gender sensitive, you know. So it's a form of gender-based violence, because you see, it favors the man, because the woman is just there as a piece of wood to satisfy the man, why she's just left there, she doesn't feel anything. And then in most cases, the survivors of FGM, they don't have urge, they don't have libido. So and you can see the aim of performing that is just for them to just
kill,
not
have,
yes, exactly. So that is it.
That's quite.
And then, mm-hmm. yeah.
You're saying something. Let's listen to.
Yes, and then in some culture, they see it as a social norm that when you is a prerequisite for you to be accepted in socially in some culture in women's wing, you know. So that is it.
Oh, well, I know that even here in the UK, there are some things we're asked to watch out for, just to make sure, especially if we suspect that someone is going to have an FGM performed on them, because usually it's an older auntie that comes and then they want to do this FGM thing. I mean, in your line of work and from what you've seen so far, are there different types of FGM that is done? I mean, when it comes to cutting off of this female genitalia, I know, reading through, I saw that there are types of it being done. Could you explain to us the types of FGM that one could actually come across?
Okay, of course, there are many types. There are major four types of FGM. You have type 1. The type 1 is the partial or total removal of the clitoris. That is the most sensitive part of the female genitalia. Then we have type 2. The type 2 is the partial or total removal of the clitoral gland and the labia minora. That is the inner fold of the vulva. Then we have another one, type 3, which is also called infibulation. Infibulation is the narrowing of the vagina opening through the creation of a cell, or sometimes through stitching. And also we have the fourth one, which is the fourth one involves all harmful procedures, you know, done to female genital organ for non-medical purposes, which includes pricking, piercing, incising, and scraping. So all these forms are, they don't have any medical background. It's just a peer cultural and religious and social beliefs. So we also have another one that they call deinfibulation. Deinfibulation is opposite of infibulation. That's the cutting of the sealed vagina opening of a woman who has been infibulated. And also is basically for the purpose of intercourse or to facilitate birth.
Wow.
So these are the major types.
And all these types that you're saying, actually they actually sound really painful. I see, doing all of that, it's not like, you know, you've said that this is not something that is being done. We know that there are some medical people that have decided that, okay, well, rather than people being exposed to doing it wrongly, why don't we just do it exactly for them, yes, so that it's done under safe conditions? Because I mean, if you're doing this and you're not even doing it under medical, you're not doing it medical, I can imagine that people are not going to do it with local anesthesia. This the child or the girl is going to be in pain while this is done. I can think of pain. Just, I mean, that's the first thing I can think of from the very top of my head. Another thing I can think of, like you said, is reduced libido. What are some of the effects of having female genital mutilation, especially what are some of the health implications of someone having female genital mutilation?
Of course, FGM has no health benefit at all.
Okay.
It only constitutes harm. And then there are so many health implications. It has health implications and psychological implications. Okay. So it has immediate complications. Immediate complication includes severe pain, excessive bleeding, genital tissue swelling, fever, infection, because the environment where it's being conducted and the person conducting it, they can even use a knife or scissor or whatever they picked from the floor and then use it. So you are not even sure of the equipment being used because they are being performed by local people. Also, urinary problem, wound healing problem, and then injuries to the surrounding vagina tissues. Uh-huh. These are some shock. In some cases, it can even result to death, you know. Now, long-term complications include urinary problems, like painful urination. Also, vaginal problems, menstrual problems, scar tissues, and sexual problem, because once a part of the female genitalia is cut off, the person has decrease in libido, and okay, then the person no longer have urge, you know. So it leads to sexual problem, because anyone who is a survivor, when she eventually marries, you know, it can constitute problem to her marriage. Yeah. So these are some of the implications. And also, psychological problems include anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, low self-esteem. Because when you're a survivor, and then when you are of age, you are not sexually satisfied, and then you're not sexually active. It leads to self-esteem, you know. So these are the major implications of FGM.
Okay, well, I think you mentioned earlier on that some cultures believe that it's going to be something that will actually help in the marriageability of a lady. So I was thinking that perhaps when you're doing that, there was already a husband waiting, and that's why they are circumcising. So does it mean people just get circumcised? Sorry, not circumcised. People just get female genital mutilation done at random, hoping that when a husband comes. So is that the husband who, in that culture, they want to check, has the girl been circumcised? Is that a way increasing, she's a virgin or she'll be faithful?
Okay, increasing marriageability means that once you are circumcised, you will not, like, it will not be hard for you to get married because men will be rushing you. In such societies or culture where it is acceptable, they do it. So anybody that wants to marry, once you are circumcised, once you have undergone FGM or you have undergone cotton, it increases your chances of being chosen, you know, for marriage. Because the person choosing you is assured that he is marrying a virgin, and also he's assured of your fidelity in marriage. So that is what you mean by increases.
So is it something that is then performed only on virgins? Is there a certain age where this is done? I mean, considering this day and age where a lot of people are actually sexually active already at the age of 10, 11, 12, is FGM something that is only done for virgins?
Okay, no, of course, FGM is mostly performed on infants and adolescents. So they basically perform it at infancy so that the child will not even know, you understand, and will not even know that it is performed on her. She will not even say it. So it's basically at infancy, at childhood, and then in rare cases in adulthood, you understand. So that is it. And then more than 3 million girls are estimated to be at risk of FGM annually. And then more than 200 million girls and women alive today have been subjected to the practice, according to WHO data.
How do you, because I'm just thinking now, how do you know if you, I'm just trying to think, as someone listening now will be wondering, is it that the people who have this done in their culture, is it that those people are aware of it, that, oh, this is going to be done at one time or the other, depending on if they want to do it, or is it just something that some particular cultures practice? So it's only those people in that culture that actually get it done?
Okay. You know, it depends on societal norms and culture. So culture differs. The people that... You know, culture is something that is being passed down to a particular generation from the previous generation. So they believe that this thing has been in existence in their culture, and it's something that they practice. So they keep doing it, you know, out of ignorance and then based on their beliefs. Mm-hmm. So the society that are practicing it, or the culture that have been practicing it, so they keep practicing it, except if maybe peradventure there is an awareness to bridge that gap, because there is just a belief, you know. So that belief can be altered. Culture can be dynamic; it can change. Yeah.
Also, I assume that in your area of work, this might be something you might be tackling about, because, I mean, if FGM has been recognized internationally, as it were, as a violation of human rights of girls and women, and to believe that perhaps in your line of work, this is something you're actually doing, raising awareness so that people will understand that there's no need for this cultural practice to be done. You know, people understand that this is just one of these... gender inequality things that need to stop. One of these violent acts, as it were, like you said already, is gender-based violence, as it were, against women, because this is something that is done to a girl, and at the ending of the day, it's really bad for the girl. So what does someone do? I mean, let's start from in Nigeria. If someone listening to us or someone knows, what does someone do if you suspect that FGM is going to be performed on you or going to be performed on someone you know? I mean, someone listening to in Nigeria now, what would you do? What should that person do?
Okay. When you suspect that you might be at risk of FGM, the best thing to do is for you to speak up. talk to someone, look for someone you trust, someone who is exposed, someone who is educated, who is enlightened. Talk to someone like a teacher or a nurse or even a counselor. Just talk to someone you trust about it, and then that person can will definitely be of help. And also, another alternative is in some countries, like in Nigeria also, is also a violation of human rights.
Just that people a crime in Nigeria?
Is against the law. Is a crime, but people do it secretly. Okay. People do it secretly, you know, in villages and, but in this modern age, it's not acceptable. So, but people still practice it. So, in I don't think we have helpline, but if you call a legal practitioner, like someone who works in human rights, if you call a particular person, the person can be of help. So, but in developed countries, I believe there are helplines available that one can call and get help.
Yes.
So these are the options.
So you're saying in Nigeria there, if you suspect that you're going to be, you know, FGM is going to perform on you, it's good for you to speak out to a teacher, speak out to a counselor. And then I think also maybe watch out for those ceremonies where you're suddenly taken to the village, because I believe things like this probably happen in the village, just so as to make sure you don't get to the village and you then get pinned down, you know, and it happens. I mean, if somebody sort of gets pinned down and it happens to them, what should they do after? Is there a need for them to seek medical advice also? Because I'm just assuming that, considering the fact that there could be some, you know, short-term effects and long-term effects, what should somebody do if they've got FGM performed on them? Hello, Asta, could you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Come again.
I said, what can someone do if they have FGM performed on them? As in, for someone who's already been mutilated, what are the things the person can do?
Okay. The person can, because once FGM is performed on you, it's not reversible. The only thing the person can do is to seek professional help, to seek a psychotherapist, the help of a psychologist. You know, the person can talk to a psychologist, and then the psychologist can actually perform psychotherapy. And psychotherapy is the use of standard psychological approaches to treat
So we're just having some issues with our internet. Osta is going to be with us shortly. Okay. I want to believe that there's still some medical things that can be done, as in to help with, for those people who have been stitched, you know, stitched the wrong way, there's still some medical things that can be done when the person goes for examination, just to help, especially when it comes to opening up a bit so that it could help with, you know, passing of urine. It could also help with childbirth. Pastor, what can we do to stop FGM from occurring in our societies? I mean, I know that you talk about raising awareness. Is there any other thing? Okay, making it a crime. Are there any other, what do you think? What's the approach you are using? I want to believe that in your line of work, you'll be using some culturally sensitive approaches. What are the things you're doing to stop FGM, and how effective have they been?
Okay, apart from awareness creation, other ones include community outreach and advocacy.
Okay.
People should speak up about the risk and realities of FGM. FGM has lasting physical needs to be discussed so that girls and women no longer have to suffer in silence. You know? So challenges, people should challenge the discriminatory reasons for FGM, because in some culture, If FGM is not carried out on you, you tend to be isolated. So people should discourage that practice, you know. So other ones include a change of tradition or a change of tradition with the support of older generation. Since these culture are being passed down from older generation, I believe culture can be dynamic. It can be changed. Some harmful traditional practices like FGM needs to be changed. And this can happen through sensitization and awareness. We need to educate our girl, empower the girl child, and then educate her on her rights so that lost enough, and then these acts have not been performed on them. When they sense that is about to be carried out on them, they will know what to do and then take active measures.
Oh, we're just having some connection problems. You know, we're getting our guests from Nigeria, so just having some slight connection issues and challenges, but she's going to be back with us.
Also, the need for FGM to be officially banned. This can happen through others, you know, when all hands are on deck to preach and advocate against FGM, it will lead to the ban of FGM.
That's quite interesting. I like what you said. I mean, you mentioned some several things that could be done as in culturally sensitive approaches. And you've also said something that is very true, that culture is dynamic. You know, culture is the beliefs of people. And if you can educate the people properly, what will happen is some cultures are going to be shoved away. You know, and at the end of the day, although we appreciate culture, we actually want the beliefs and the practices to be the ones that are helpful for the people that the culture, that possess the culture. You've also said that if we do some community sensitization and even using, as it were, religious leaders is another thing, you know, that could move things forward, getting the imams, getting the pastors to speak against female genital mutilation. I mean, it's about the girl child. And you said, you talked about the rights of a girl child, the right of a girl child to, you know, right of her to her body, right of that girl child to what she wants. Because at the end of the day, like what you've said this evening, there is no benefit at all for female genital mutilation. No benefit. Yes. It's all harm. At the end of the day, it's all harm. It's something that is being done selfishly to sort of like protect the other gender. And I'm not sure really that enlightened men of today would want to be having sexual relationships with their partners, having that with partners who can't even be satisfied because, you know, you've taken off the very, very most sensitive part of their sexual, their sexual organ. Osta, before we leave today, do you have a final word before we leave today for anyone listening to us, you know, wondering about female genital mutilation? Could there be someone who is also passionate about this? Would they want to join the work that you're doing? What is it that they can do? What are the challenges? I would just like to hear a final word from you before we call it a day, because we like to keep things short in this program. Thank you.
Okay. Female genital mutilation or cutting is not just a human rights violation. It is also a public health issue.
Okay.
Cutting can result in physical problems such as infertility and even painful sex and childbirth, you know, and then also psychological problems such as anxiety and depression. So my word to our viewers out there is that everybody should speak up. Everybody should join hands and sensitize and advocate on advocate against female genital mutilation. Preach about it in your neighborhood, especially if you are residing in society that are still perpetuating this act. Speak up, tell them the health implications. You know, through sensitization, it will go a long way to bring about positive change in behavior, in knowledge, in behavior. So sensitization, speak, talk to people. Now that our viewers are now aware and they are enlightened on female genital mutilation, they should help to spread the news neighborhood to their friends and everywhere. So sensitization will go a long way in putting a stop.
Thank you so much, Oster. We are really very happy to have had you in our program today. Thank you for all you've taught us today, teaching us about what female genital mutilation is, the different types, the effects of female genital mutilation, why it is practiced, and what we can do about stopping this harmful practice. I want to say also to our viewers that we shouldn't think that living in the United Kingdom means that people are not at risk of female genital mutilation. We still have these older aunties coming with their weapons, like we've seen in some of our flyers today. We've put up flyers of blades and blood coming out and the lady. You know, these things still happen because of the culture being ingrained. So if you see a child, you know, if you see a child becoming moody, let's, like we've always advocated, let's watch out for each other. Let it not just be me, myself, and I. Watch out. And if a child comes to you saying to you that they're a bit concerned, as it were, about some things that are about to happen, be the angel for the child, be the one to speak up. And if you're a child, listen, you can talk to your teacher, you can say to your teacher, this is what I'm suspecting. I'm even suspecting, as in, you're not even allowed to take a child outside the UK, a British citizen, a child outside the UK, to go and do female genital mutilation for them outside the country and then bring them back. It's a crime. It's a crime. It should never, it should not be done. Thank you so much for your time, Oster. And I want to say a big thank you to everyone who has joined us today. I really do appreciate. I've seen Toluto, who's joined us last. We've seen Nikas. Thank you, Kate. Thank you also, beautiful mind. Thank you, Oster. Thank you also, Auntie Amaka, Dr. Amaka, who joined us last week. Thank you for joining us today. Want to say that we'd like all hands to be on deck as we continue this fight. It's a form of abuse, it's a violation of human rights, and it's something we should all speak against. And in speaking against it, let's try to do it in language that people would understand. If they understand us, we'll be able to pass the message across. Till we come your way again next week. Next week, interestingly, is going to be the International Men's Day. You know, today, interestingly, we've talked about female, we've talked about something to do with women. You know, next week is International Men's Day. So we're going to be looking at true masculinity. What does it mean to be a man? And we are going to definitely have a man coming to talk to us about it. So I want to ask every one of us to keep it a date. It's going to be 8 p.m. next week. It's going to also be another explosive session. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. This is Kada Matters. Kada is a acronym for Church Against Domestic Abuse. And on this program, we talk about everything that has to do with domestic abuse, especially as it involves the faith as Christians. Until we come your way again, just remember that God hates abuse. There's no excuse for domestic abuse. And the church, says no to domestic abuse. Thank you so very much. Bye for now. Thank you.
Thank you,
Oster. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed and learnt from today's session. Till we come your way again, remember, God hates abuse. There is no excuse for abuse. The church, which is you and I, say no to domestic abuse.